Welcome to the Brains Bible Institute. I'm Pastor Tim Warner, your teacher. We're in module number 11 on the book of Revelation. We are in going into chapter 8 today. This is lesson number 22. Now, in the previous lessons, we've been talking about the seven seals and what they represent. And one of the things that I mentioned before was that the seals seem to parallel strongly with the Olivet Discourse that Jesus gave in Matthew chapter 24. And seals 1 through 4, which are the four horsemen, seem to parallel the very things that Jesus said would precede the abomination of desolation. That is, the things that Jesus said were the beginnings of birth pains. And then Jesus talked about the abomination of desolation in Matthew 24:15. And then following that, he talked about the great tribulation and how that his followers were going to have to flee from Judea. And that was for their own safety, obviously. And we also see that in the seals, we have the fifth seal, which describes this intense persecution of Christ's followers there. And then, of course, this is followed by the sixth seal, which is the cosmic signs that occur, the sun and the moon being darkened, the stars falling, heaven being parted like a scroll and is rolled up, things like that. We see that in the sixth seal, and we see that in Matthew 24:29-31. And Jesus said at that point that this is when he is going to sound the trumpet and send out his angels to gather together his elect. That is, it is at the time that the cosmic signs are taking place. Now, we also know from passages such as Isaiah chapter 11, Joel chapter 3, and some other Old Testament passages that the day of the Lord is when these cosmic signs occur, and that this is when the Battle of Armageddon takes place. I just want to refresh your memory on that quickly. Go to Joel chapter 3. We see this intense battle, what's referred to as Armageddon, in Revelation 19. It's described in Joel chapter 3. If you go to verse 13, it says, well, actually go to verse 4. I'm sorry, 12. It says, let the nations be awakened and come up to the valley of Jehoshaphat. For there I will sit to judge all the surrounding nations. Put in the sickle, for the harvest is ripe. Come, go down, for the winepress is full. The vats overflow, for their wickedness is great. And we see this winepress metaphor used of the Battle of Armageddon in Revelation 19 as well, when it says that he himself, that is the Son of Man coming in the clouds, that he is trampling the winepress of the wrath of God. So we see that there. We see it also in Revelation chapter 14. It's mentioned again. But anyway, then he says, verse 14, multitudes, multitudes in the valley of decision, for the day of the Lord is near in the valley of decision. Now here's the cosmic signs. The sun and moon will grow dark. The stars will diminish their brightness. The Lord will roar from Zion and utter his voice from Jerusalem. The heavens and the earth will shake. But the Lord will be a shelter for his people and a strength for the children of Israel. And then beginning in verse 17, it talks about him establishing his kingdom upon the earth. And so it's clear from this passage, Isaiah 11, Zechariah 14, other passages, that the cosmic signs are there to announce the coming of Christ to defeat and to overthrow the armies of the nations that had previously gathered, right? So that's the Battle of Armageddon. Well, in Matthew 24, Jesus then says that he is going to send his angels with the sound of a trumpet and gather together his elect at the time that these cosmic signs are taking place. So what that does, by comparing the cosmic signs and what's associated with them, it's clear that the gathering of Christ's elect occurs immediately prior to the Battle of Armageddon, that it is actually an integral part of Christ's coming to destroy the armies of the nations that in the process of that coming, he sends his angels and gathers together his elect, right? All right, now, we also, we saw that the seventh seal, which is mentioned in Revelation chapter 8 and verse 1, it says very little about it. It says that when the seventh seal was opened, that there was silence in heaven for about the space of half an hour. And that's all that's said about that. Now, a lot of people think that, well, the seventh seal then is the prelude to the seven trumpets that we see beginning in chapter 8 and verse 2. And so they think that the trumpets follow sequentially after the sixth seal, and so the seventh seal would encompass all of the trumpets and maybe even all of the bowl judgments after that. But that's not the case, because then that would require that we separate the cosmic signs when Christ gathers together his elect from the Battle of Armageddon. All right, because, like, for example, those who teach a pre-wrath point of view, they believe that Jesus gathers his elect after the tribulation, but then there's this period of time that they call the Day of the Lord, for many months and sometimes even years, whereby the events described in the trumpets take place after believers allegedly are caught up to heaven at the sixth seal. Okay, well, that's simply not correct. Nobody is being caught up into heaven, into the abode of God. And not only that, our being caught up into the air to meet the Lord in the air takes place while he's coming back in order to destroy the armies of these nations for the Battle of Armageddon. There's only one future coming of Christ. There's not two more future comings of Christ. There's not one coming to take us to heaven, followed by another one where he comes later, months or years later, to destroy the Antichrist. All right. Now, we'll also see that that's clear in several passages in Revelation, but it's actually implied even here in chapter 8. What's implied in chapter 8, as we'll see, is that the believers are not in heaven in chapter 8. See, if that view was correct, you would expect that the believers would all be in heaven in chapter 8 while the trumpets are being poured out, but that's not the case at all. And that's because the trumpets go back now and they begin to recap and to repeat the same period of time that's covered by the seven seals. That is, that last 7-year period is covered by all of the seals, the first four seals being from the beginning of that period until the midpoint, and then the last two occurring in the last half of that 7-year period. Well, we have the same thing with the trumpets. The first four trumpets occur during the first half of that 7-year period prior to the abomination of desolation that Jesus talked about in Matthew 24:15. And then the last of the trumpets, number 5, 6, and 7, occur after the abomination of desolation, the last one being the arrival of the kingdom, just like this, the seventh seal was the arrival of the kingdom. All right, so these patterns are between the seals and the trumpets are very much the same. Also, you may remember that with regard to the seals, just before he got to the seventh seal, there was sort of this interlude, and he talked about how that the 144,000 were going to be sealed for protection before any of those things happen, right? So it's sort of a right between the sixth and seventh seals, we have this little break where he goes back and describes something previous. Well, the same thing happens with the trumpets. When we get between the sixth and seventh trumpets, you're going to see that it does exactly the same thing. That is, it jumps back and recaps some things and gives more detail about some things prior to getting then into the seventh trumpet. So the pattern is exactly the same with the seals and the trumpets. Okay. All right. Now let's begin reading in Revelation chapter 8, and we'll start in verse 2. You may remember last time I told you that verse 1 really should be the last verse of chapter 7, and that's how I have my LGV translation set up. So chapter 8 starts with verse 2. And I observed the seven messengers who have stood before God, and the seven trumpets were given to them. And another messenger came and stood before the altar having a golden censer. And much incense was given to him that he should offer it with the prayers of all the saints upon the golden altar which was before the throne. And the smoke of the incense with the prayers of the saints ascended before God from the hand of the messenger. And the messenger took the censer and filled it from the fire of the altar and threw it onto the land, and there were thunderings, noises, lightnings, and a shaking. And the seven messengers, having the seven trumpets, prepared themselves to sound. Now what we have here in verses 2 through 6 is a sort of a introduction or a preview of what's about to occur. Now I want you to notice some very important things that it says just prior to these seven trumpet judgments being poured out on the earth. First of all, it says that there are seven messengers or seven angels who have stood before God, or literally have come to stand before God. And he puts this, that verb there, have stood, is a perfect tense verb, which means when John saw this, they had already come to stand before God, and he was seeing the result of their coming to stand before God. They were each given a trumpet. But I want you to notice in verse 3, it says, and another messenger or another angel came and stood before the altar. Now, what altar is he talking about? You may remember we spent a great deal of time in the past talking about how that there is a temple of God in heaven, and the temple that, or the tabernacle on earth that was built by Moses was intended to be made according to the pattern of the one that was shown to Moses when he was up on Mount Sinai. That is the temple in heaven. Hebrews talks a great deal about the temple in heaven being the reality and the temple on earth being simply a representation of what is in heaven, right? And the priesthood, the service, all that stuff corresponding to the realities that are actually in heaven. And so there's two altars in the temple on earth, and there were two altars also with regard to the temple in heaven. We have the altar of sacrifice, which is where the blood of the animals was shed, and that was outside the structure of the temple itself. And then inside the temple was what was referred to as the golden altar, or the altar of incense. And this was right before the veil that separated the Holy of Holies from the rest of the temple structure. And it is this altar, the altar of incense, that plays a part in this chapter, in Revelation chapter 8. Now, I want you to notice what's going on at this altar. It says, another messenger or another angel, this is the eighth angel, came and stood before the altar having a golden censer, and much incense was given him that he should offer it with the prayers of all the saints upon the golden altar which was before the throne. Now, the altar in the temple on earth was they actually offered incense on the altar. But again, it's an allegory of what's going on in heaven. And the incense that's being offered is a representation of the prayers of God's people coming up before his throne. And he smells that as a sweet smell. But I want you to notice here that this angel, this is just before the seven trumpets are begin to be blown, that this angel, his role is to be offering the prayers of all the saints. You see that? Offering the prayers of all the saints upon the golden altar which was before the throne. And the smoke of the incense with the prayers of the saints ascends to God from the hand of the messenger. Now, question, if Christians have been caught up to heaven and prior to this, then why are their prayers being offered as incense before God? You see, the point is that they're not present. The saints are not present in heaven. Instead, their prayers are being offered up as incense before God. Now, I want you to go take your Bibles and go over to Luke chapter 21 for just a moment. And we see Jesus gave some important instructions with regard to believers' preservation during the time of Great Tribulation. In Luke 21:36, this is what he said. After describing the events that are going to occur, including the cosmic signs, he said to them, actually go back to verse 34. But take heed to yourselves, lest your hearts be weighed down with carousing, drunkenness, and cares of this life, and that day, that is the day of Christ's coming, come upon you unexpectedly, for it will come as a snare on all those who dwell on the face of the whole earth. Now here's the key verse. Watch therefore and pray always that you may be counted worthy. Now, the word "that" could be confusing to some people, because some people read this verse as saying that this is what you should be praying for. That is, watch therefore and pray always. Pray that you will be found worthy. But that's not what it's saying. It's the word hina in Greek, which means so that or in order that. And it's going to tell us the reason why. So watch therefore and pray always so that, in order that, you may be counted worthy to escape or flee all these things that will come to pass and to stand before the Son of Man. So in light of the fact that God has told us in advance about all these things that are coming upon the world in the last days, our instructions, Jesus' instructions to his followers, is that we should watch and pray always. And why are we watching and praying always? Because God is judging us whether we are worthy to escape or flee all these things that are about to happen and to stand before the Son of Man. So it is our duty to watch the signs and to pray always. Always be praying so that we'll be found worthy to escape those things, right? Now, in Revelation, what do we have here? At the beginning of the trumpets, and again, as I said, the trumpets take us all the way back to the beginning of the tribulation again. So this is as though it's the very beginning of what Jesus said was going to occur with regard to the tribulation. And what is the scene that's painted for us? Well, we have seven angels handed seven trumpets. These are God's judgments that are about to fall upon the land. And just prior to them blowing their trumpets, what do we find? We have another, an eighth angel, and he is offering up the prayers of the saints as incense on the golden altar in heaven. This is Christians heeding Luke 21:36, that are watching and they're praying so that they will be counted worthy to escape all these things. Well, what does that imply then? It implies that they're on the earth. It doesn't imply that they're already in heaven, as pre-trib and pre-wrath views claim. What would be the point of praying and their prayers being offered up to God if they're already there? They're already resurrected and all that stuff, right? It would make no real sense. All right, so let's go back to Revelation chapter 8, verse 4. It says, "The smoke of the incense with the prayers of the saints ascended before God from the hand of the messenger, and the messenger took the censer, filled it from the fire of the altar, and threw it onto the land. And there were thunderings, noises, lightnings, and a shaking." Now, what we see is this is the very same messenger, the same angel or messenger who is offering incense up before God and the prayers of the saints before God, presenting them to God while they're praying to be worthy to escape all these things. The very same messenger then takes fire from the altar and he casts it down upon the earth, and then there's all this noise and thunderings and lightning and earthquakes and all this stuff that's happening. Well, what do those things represent? They represent the wrath of God falling upon the land and upon the ungodly. So what we have here in this scene, or this little prelude to the trumpets, is God's people offering up their prayers to God, and the angel then beginning to pour out this, or throw this fire down onto the land, which is a symbol of the judgments that are about to follow. All right. All right. Now let's let's go to verse 7. Let's look at the some of these plagues, okay? He says, "And the first messenger sounded," that's the first trumpet is blown, "and there came hail and fire mixed with blood, and it was thrown upon the land, and a third of the land was burned, and a third of the trees were burned, and all green vegetation burned." Now, this is the first trumpet. Now, you may remember back during these seals, when it talked about, in chapter 7, it talked about the 144,000 that were sealed for protection. It said, do not hurt the earth nor the trees, or, you know, the grass or the trees or any of that stuff until we have sealed the servants of God in their forehead. So it's taking us back to the beginning of the time of tribulation, prior to this wrath being poured out, and saying God's people, these Jews, these 144,000 Jews, need to be sealed for protection prior to that happening. Well, here in the trumpets now, the very first trumpet, what happens? We have the a third of the land being burned. But I want you to notice what this plague actually entails. It says there came hail and fire mixed with blood. Hail and fire mixed with blood. Now look, this is not just some random plague that God just suddenly dreamt up for the end times. These plagues in Revelation are closely modeled after the plagues that God brought down upon the Egyptians when Pharaoh would not let God's people go, right? And so God's people were preserved within the environment where the plagues were taking place, but God watched over them. And so we'll see that these trumpets are modeling those. Take your Bibles and go over to Exodus chapter 9, verse 23. Actually, go to 22. "Then the Lord said to Moses, stretch out your hand toward heaven, that there may be a hail on all the land of Egypt, on man, on beast, and on every herb of the field throughout all the land of Egypt. And Moses stretched out his rod toward heaven, and the Lord sent..." Now, no, I want you to notice this. "Thunder and hail and fire darted to the ground. Also the Lord rained hail on all the land of Egypt. So there was hail and fire mingled with hail." You see, now, have you ever seen fire mingled with hail? That's something that's unheard of, right? But that's, it occurred here, fire mingled with hail. Well, what does it say here in Revelation 8:7? It says, "The first messenger sounded, there came hail and fire mixed with blood, and it was thrown upon the land." Hail accompanied by fire. And of course, the blood is from the damage that was done to people and whatnot. So that a very, back in Exodus 9:24, he says, "So that a very heavy, so very heavy that there was none like it in all the land of Egypt since it became a nation. And the hail struck throughout the whole land of Egypt, all that was in the field, both man and beast. And the hail struck every herb of the field and broke every tree of the field. Only in the land of Goshen, where the children of Israel were, there was no hail." All right, so hail mingled with fire is clearly drawing on the plagues from Exodus. I don't think anybody can deny that. All right, well, let's look at the next plague. Verse 8 in Revelation 8, it says, "And the second messenger sounded, and something like a great mountain burning with fire was thrown into the sea, and a third of the sea became blood." Now, where have we heard of the waters being turned to blood before? Again, it comes from the plagues in Egypt. Exodus chapter, I think it's 7. Yes, Exodus chapter 7. Let's go to verse 17. "Thus says the Lord, by this you will know that I am the Lord. Behold, I will strike the waters which are in the river and with the rod that is in my hand, and they shall be turned into blood. and the fish that are in the river shall die, and the river shall stink, and the Egyptians will loathe to drink the water of the river. Then the Lord spoke to Moses, say to Aaron, take your rod and stretch out your hand over the waters of Egypt, over the streams, over the rivers, over the ponds, and over all the pools of water, that they may become blood. And there shall be blood throughout all the land of Egypt, both in buckets of wood and pitchers of stone. And Moses and Aaron did so, just as the Lord commanded. So he lifted up the rod and struck the waters that were in the river, and in the sight of Pharaoh and the sight of his servants, and all the waters that were in the river were turned into blood. The fish that were in the river died, and the river stank, and the Egyptians could not drink the water of the river, so there was blood throughout all the land of Egypt. Then the magicians of Egypt did so with their enchantments, and Pharaoh's heart grew hard, and he did not heed them. All right, so we have the water turned to blood. Now, in Revelation chapter 8, the plague here is that the sea, not the rivers, but the sea, is turned to blood. Now, what sea do you suppose that is? Well, all of these plagues are Israel-centric. That is, they are centered on God's land, the land he promised to Abraham. When it says that these things came upon the earth or the land, it's focused on that part of the world. It's not necessarily saying it's going to happen in around the entire globe. Okay, anyway, it says, let me go back to verse, let's see, verse 8. It says, and the second messenger sounded, and something like a great mountain burning with fire was thrown into the sea, and a third of the sea became blood. So something falls from the sky. What is it that falls from the sky? Well, it could be an asteroid, it could be a comet, it could be something like a mountain falling into the sea. Now, what sea is he referring to? It's the Mediterranean Sea. This is the sea that bordered Egypt, and this is the sea that borders Israel today. It's the Mediterranean Sea. All right, so notice also that it is a third. Back in the first trumpet, it was a third of the vegetation that was burned. Here in the second trumpet, it is a third of the waters are become blood. And verse 9, it says, a third of the creatures in the sea having life died. Now that is a third of the creatures in the Mediterranean Sea are going to die. And a third of the ships were destroyed. Now, something I need to point out before we get there. When we get to the seven bowls of wrath, which are in chapter 16, the order and the types of these plagues parallel the trumpets, right? We have the same things happening in the same order. However, the amount or the intensity of the judgment increases in the bowl judgments, all right? Here it is a third that is destroyed. There it is a half of what's left from these is then destroyed, okay? All right, so that would end up being a total destruction between both sets of plagues of being one half of the trees, one half of the ships, one half of the creatures in the sea, all that kind of stuff. All right, anyway, let's continue reading verse number 10. And the third messenger sounded, and a great star fell from the sky, burning like a torch. So now we have another. The first one, it said, was like a mountain falling from the sky. This one is like a great star. So this one is flaming, blazing hot. And it fell on a third of the rivers and on the springs of water. Now, just like in Egypt, when Moses and Aaron, when they called the plague of the water turned to blood, it was upon the freshwater sources. And that's what we have here, right? But first, before that happens, what God is doing in the end times is he's taking the plague he put on Egypt and he's multiplying it by a much greater degree. Instead of only going after the river, the Nile River and its tributaries, instead he does the entire Mediterranean Sea. And then, if that was not enough, excuse me, he then sends the next plague, the next trumpet, upon the fresh water supplies as well. Excuse me. Verse 11, and the name of the star is called Wormwood. Now, wormwood was actually a plant. Back in ancient times, it was a plant that had a very, I don't know if I'd call it acidic, but it had a very bitter quality to it. It was actually used as an insecticide, or it was extract from this plant was used as an insecticide. And another thing they did with it, when they had animals that had worms, is they would take leaves from this tree and they would make a like a tea out of it, and they would feed it to the animals, and it would kill the worms and these parasites that were in the animals, and it would come out, you know, in their waste. And so it was called wormwood for that reason, but it also tended to make someone very sick if they were to try to drink it. And so the point here is that all the fresh water in this area is going to become bitter and undrinkable by humanity. Well, he said a third of the waters became wormwood, and many men died from the waters that were made toxic. Verse 12. And the fourth messenger sounded, and a third of the sun was struck, and a third of the moon, and a third of the stars, so that a third of them should be obscured, and a third of the day should not be illuminated, and the night likewise. Now, this plague is not striking the actual cosmic objects themselves, like the sun, moon, stars. It is striking the light from these objects. That is, it says that the light from them is going to be obscured, right, about by a third. So a third of the day and a third of the night is going to have the light obscured by that, okay? Now, we see the same, again, thing happening with the plagues in Egypt, right? We have the darkness over all the land. Go to Exodus chapter 10. And verse 21. Then the Lord said to Moses, stretch out your hand toward heaven, that there may be darkness over the land of Egypt, darkness which may even be felt. So Moses stretched out his hand toward heaven, and there was a thick darkness in all the land of Egypt 3 days. They did not see one another, nor did anyone rise from his place for 3 days, but all the children of Israel had light in their dwellings. Then Pharaoh called to Moses and said, go serve the Lord only. Let your flocks and your herds be kept back. Let your little ones also go with you. I'm sorry, Pharaoh said that. But anyway, then he changes his mind again, and the whole thing happens over and over, right, with all these plagues. Well, again, God is doing with the Antichrist, with the wicked nations of the earth, he's doing the same thing he did with Pharaoh, but now he's doing it on a much larger scale. Were God's people caught up to heaven to escape the plagues of Egypt? No, they were there to watch them happen right in front of them, because God was about to deliver them out from under the burden of the Egyptians. And God is about to deliver us out from under the wickedness of this world system. And he is going to judge the world system, and we are going to be spectators right here. Now, I want you to go, before we close, I want you to go over to Isaiah chapter 26 for just a moment. Isaiah 26 talks, we mentioned chapter 25, which talks about the marriage feast of the Lamb and all that. 26 is a song that will be sung on the day of Christ's return. But after that, we have this exhortation. Verse 19, it says, your dead shall live. Together with my dead body they shall arise. That is with Isaiah's dead body. Awake and sing, you who dwell in the dust. For your dew is like the dew of herbs, and the earth shall cast out the dead. This is, of course, talking about the hope of the resurrection. But then he says, come, my people, enter your chambers, and shut your doors behind you. Hide yourself, as it were, for a little moment, until the indignation is past, or God's wrath is past. For behold, the Lord comes out of his place to punish the inhabitants of the earth for their iniquity. The earth will also disclose her blood and will no more cover her slain. Now, in light of the fact that we are promised the resurrection, in light of the fact that God has prophesied in Isaiah 24 that he's going to send this time of tribulation upon the earth and his judgments upon the earth, in light of the fact that he promises us the marriage feast of the Lamb in chapter in Isaiah 25, and now in 26, he tells us, in light of all that, go and hide yourselves, he says, enter your chambers and shut your doors behind you. Hide yourself, as it were, for a little moment until the indignation is past. Is not that exactly what the children of Israel did during the plagues of Egypt? So much so that this is a reference to the Passover when he says, enter your chambers and shut your doors behind you, because the very last plague was the death of the firstborn. And so what did God instruct the Israelites to do? They had to kill the lamb. They had to put the blood on the doorposts and the lintel of their house. And then they were to go inside and shut the door and hide themselves until God's wrath had passed by. There's no question that Isaiah 26 is talking about, or it is paralleling, the Passover, but it puts it in an end time context. And that's because the same thing is going to happen again. And those who have the blood of the Lamb over their household, over the door of their house, not literally, we're speaking figuratively, of course, but God is going to preserve his own while he sends the plagues, while he sends the death angel through. He says, hide yourself, shut your doors, stay inside until the wrath is past. And this is exactly what we see throughout the book of Revelation. This is why the saints are praying at the beginning of these trumpets being opened, and the angel is offering up the prayers of the saints as incense before God. At the same time, he then throws the fire from the altar onto the earth to show God's judgment is coming. So the saints are going to be preserved from God's wrath during that time while we're still here on the earth. But God is able, just like he was able to preserve the Israelites, he's able to preserve us as well. All right, let's just finish the chapter quickly. It says in verse 13, and I saw and heard an eagle flying in midair. Some translations say an angel, but the majority text has eagle, and the that seems to be the oldest reading also. I saw and heard an eagle flying in midair, saying with a great voice, woe, woe, woe. Notice there's three woe. Woe, 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 right? Woe, 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 land dwellers, from the remaining trumpet blasts of the three messengers about to sound. Now, we've had 1 through 4, which is the first half of the time of tribulation. The second half of the time of tribulation, it's not just trumpets blown, but each of those last three trumpets are called woes. And a woe is something that is horrific, because it's the time of great tribulation. The first half is beginning of birth pains. The second half is great tribulation, great trouble, great affliction. And that's why it's called woe, woe, woe here. All right. All right, we're going to stop there. I'm actually a little early today, which is really unusual for me. And we'll pick up with the fifth trumpet beginning in chapter 9 next time. All right. God bless you all, and we'll see you next time.